Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio. This is our September the 16th, 2017 episode. The label One Hit Wonder is an enigma when most commonly used in regard to music performances with only one top 40 hit single that overshadows their other work. The song looms larger than the artist and may be a positive or a negative force. It can serve as the foundation to build an entire career as a performer, or it can be the puzzling albatross that is forever linked to the typecast the artist for only the one song. However, there is one artist who uniquely defies logic when discussing one-hit wonders, and it's Tony Burrows, who describes himself as the only one-hit wonder who did it five times, all in the 70s, although not a household name. When it comes to chart success, this Brit is a record breaker, and in this show, the Timmons brothers will examine why he is one of a kind while exploring other one-hit artists. John and David Timmons, welcome to the show.
How you doing, John?
John, doing really well. Thanks for having us here. It's going to be a fun topic to talk about, and I think the name Tony Burrows, a lot of people out there have no idea who he is, but if you're a baby boomer and wants to get here at the end of this show, they're going to be like, that's Tony Burrows.
You know what's funny about that, and then we're going to talk about his different hits in the bands, and we'll know, you know, the bands, the names of the bands when they come up, but I wonder why, when you guys talked to him, did you ask him why he never used his own name or why he didn't record any of the songs under his name? Or were these all legitimate bands he was in, or were they kind of just names that they used for projects he was in?
I know a little bit about this. To get a little story here, a kind of background. For Dave and I, it was September of 2001, and on 911, it was on a Tuesday. And I drove from South Carolina to Ohio to go to the festival in the Washington Courthouse for the Scarecrow Festival. And the group scheduled to perform Edison Lighthouse. And we find out, we get there that they were still performing, but we heard their story. They were in Houston, Texas on that Tuesday, 9-1-1 in 2001, and all flights had been stopped. They took a van and drove from Houston, Texas to Washington Courthouse to get there in time and then do the concert with all that going on in the country. So I always like to give that
show background
to what were the conditions when we actually met him. And as far as the name, I think, John, they just came up with unusual names. The name White Plains, little background here on Tony Burrows, his first group that had some success was called the Flower Pot Man. And they had a song, came out in 1967, called Let's Go to San Francisco, which was very comparable to Scott McKenzie, If You're Going to San Francisco, Wear Flowers in Your Hair, in that same kind of genre, that same kind of mode. It didn't do very well in the USA, but was much better in England. And it was the big deal to go to San Francisco. And I remember reading about this with Tony Burrows. He said it was 1969. We had been a group. We just weren't coming out with other songs, and we weren't having any success. So we was about ready to say, let's give it up. And he said, we had this name we were stuck with, the Flower Pot Man. We were known for wearing a lot
of
bells and
name.
Beads. I know.
I wonder if
he
wore
the
pot on her
head. He said, you got to remember, it was 1969. He goes, yeah, and we're caught with the word pot, and the tone has changed by 1969, where it sounded good, and the flower power of 67.
Yep.
And here's a name that you might be familiar with. They were in the studio, and Dick Rowe of he was the head of the Decca Records. Well, what Dick Rowe is most famous for, he was the guy in 1962 had John, Paul, George, and Ringo try out, and he told Brian Epstein, well, Mr. Epstein, I'd like to sign them, but guitar bands are on their way out.
There you go.
And,
pretty bright,
so he had to live with that legacy.
Oh, yeah.
And so.
Oh, man, that's awful.
It is, isn't it? It really is. So the producer was a fellow by the name of Roger Greenaway, who did a lot of work with Tony Burrows. And Greenaway was also in the group called the Flower Pot Man. And he goes, well, and this is Dick Rowe. He said, we got all these songs. They're in the can. But you don't want me to release them or anything, a Flower Pot Man. And do you mind if I release them and I pick a name? And they said, we don't care. They're probably not going to do anything anyway. So he pretty much threw a dart at the United States map and hit on White Plains in New York. He goes, well, fellas, you just became White Plains.
Hey, just like the Bay City Rollers.
And Dave's right. That's how the Bay City Rollers got their name, when they threw a dart at the state of Michigan.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I didn't know that. I didn't know that for either one of those bands. Because when I heard White Plains, I thought, I've been there. It's a little town in New York. I think Bill and Hillary live there.
Yeah.
The historical background on White Plains, that's where George Washington got his first victory in the Revolutionary War, too.
Oh, okay. You got to get your first victory somewhere.
Yeah.
And so, John, to this day, because lately I've been telling people about this show coming up and some of the songs behind it. And people that are really authorities on music, that love coming to our trivia shows and really get into it, I've almost heard this constantly, like, you mean White Plains was not American? I said, nope, they were all Brits, and it's probably none of them had ever even been to White Plains, you know.
Yeah, or heard of it. It's just a throw of the dart.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a pretty good name.
In fact, Tony Burrows, I remember saying that we took the name of some area in New York. He didn't even know it was a city. It was just he called it some area in New York.
There you go. Well, it's a lot better than the Flower Pot Man.
Yes,
definitely.
We'll give it that. I mean, that's a terrible name. And it's,
now, they
I
could
mean,
have been like DeVoe, though, and could have wore flower pots on their head. You know, DeVoe was for them little crowns.
Good point.
Yeah, that's funny. So you've got this guy, and do you know, John, any of his, like, background? I mean, before he was in the Flower Pot Men, or was that, like, his big breakthrough? And maybe for the listeners, was he a singer-songwriter? Did he play instruments? Did he, you know, what's some of the background on Tony?
Right. His big breakthrough was for the Flower Pot Man, but up until then, he really made his name as a, you know, always hear of studio musicians, like the Wrecking
right.
Crew. Well, he was a studio vocalist and became like the background vocal for a lot of hits that were being made in England in the late 50s, early 60s. And
yeah, he worked with Parrot Records and EMI, too.
And he also toured with the Beatles when they before they came to America. So he was well respected by his peers, and so many connections, John, that he made over the years throughout the 70s. There's a lot of songs that he may not be given credit, but he was brought in for his vocal songs by Rod Stewart, Elton John, Cliff Richard, all these big name artists. We need a background vocal. Let's get Tony. The song "Tiny Dancer," Elton John. He was in on that. "Devil Woman," Cliff Richard. He was in on that.
My
Bang
goodness.
"Bang a Gong" with T-Rex.
In fact, the reason that song we have it for the show tonight, his wife told us that he's the one that came up with the riff, because he can also play guitar. That famous riff from that "Bang a Gong" song, from the song by T-Rex. And I tried to find something that would support the evidence, and Dave did find something. Dave, can you talk about that?
Yeah, I've had an old Cream magazine, and on the cover was T-Rex about playing "Bang a Gong," and it mentions Tony Burrows being in the studio with him, along with Elton John. And he played on the whole album, basically, but his guitar riffs, when he came in with them, Bolan liked them riffs so good, because he's a good guitar player, too, and Bolan said, let's keep that on the record, and so Bolan picked up on them riffs, and so Tony was with them, played on that whole Electric Warrior album. Basically, which is probably T-Rex's best album, and like I said, Bolan gave him credit, and then also his work with Cliff Richard. He said in the "Devil Woman" sessions, and he also worked with Cliff Richard on his second album he made in the United States. So over in England, he was well known, and I believe, John, if I'm right, he did some work with Paul McCartney.
Yeah, yeah. He did some work with McCartney for background vocals when it was Wings. And that stands back. He toured twice with the Beatles before they came to America. So he knew them really well. They knew him. And I guess it's just such an enigma. The more I learn about him, it's like I just get more curious to hear this artist that I never heard of until 2001. And I keep researching, finding out more and more. And I guess it's like sort of finding this diamond in the rough that had always been there, and you just find it really interesting the more you learn.
Remember, John, he was very soft-spoken about it, too, when he talked about it.
Very down-to-earth and very
yes.
humble.
And if he had – yeah, I think that's kind of cool. We can just take a second to talk about that, because when you do find out, if you do get a chance a lot of times to talk to these people that are very talented and have history in rock and roll and can drop names, I mean, like McCartney and Elton John and Mark Bolan and people like that,
yeah.
they could be real obnoxious and, you know, maybe have some kind of crazy tour set up around it, you know. But it seemed mm-hmm. to me like a lot of the people that have that history are, like you said, you know, very humble people. They are incredibly talented. And as we play songs and through this show tonight, we're going to tell or find out that he does have a really marketable voice. I mean, it's not overwhelming. It's not like, I don't know how you would say it. It's just really listenable. You know, does that make sense, guys? It's like, like the song we heard, Rosemary Grow or Love Grows. That's such an incredible song. I can remember that song. And it's a song that you hear and that you think, that is just sounds great. It just flows. It just has a great melody, nice hook to it. The vocals are good. There's nothing pretentious about the song. I just think that, you know, and I would have never thought of this, and well, you guys brought the subject up with him about him being,
John,
behind all that.
You know, John, and a good point you brought up about his voice. It's a very listenable voice, and I count him up there as one of the voices of rock and roll. And of course, John knows who several of the artists I think have good voices, but Tony Burrow's songs just have a way about him. And like I said, when we heard him live, there's a guy, it sounded like his records, not like the artists they have to have so many tapes with them and stuff. And when he went into them songs, John, didn't he sound just like the record exactly?
Good voice. You know, something, John, that I've noticed, even with the high-quality ability today in the studio, and they have to dub this and change this and so on, he was doing this in 70, 71. The words are so clear, and he pronunciates. You understand what is being sung, yet it's still got a good melody. It's not like he's working at it. It just comes without effort almost.
Oh, that's
and
a great
with
way
that,
to put it.
And with in the quality and the range, you know, and tonight before the show's over, the songs that he was the voice of that went hits, they're so diverse. Like you would think, okay, there must have been this formula behind each one, and that's why it worked. And
hey, John, and you brought up
some of them are so different.
How about the off the wall song like "Gimme That Ding"?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about an old piano ragtime song coming out in 1970 and it becomes a hit again. I mean, it almost sounded like something that could have been 35, 40 years earlier at the time, you know, and you could peg it as sort of a novelty song, but that was Tony with those deep vocals, the guy that sounds like he's got like sort of a graveled voice, and like, where'd that come from, you know?
Yeah, I would have never in a million years thought that that was him.
That was amazing. When Capitol really thought there was a group called the Pimpkins, and Capitol wanted the Pimpkins to do a world tour, and he had to explain to you it was just him and three other studio musicians, and they got all excited about this. And it's so amazing when they did that stuff. And I remember their one appearance, him and another guy dressed up like Tweedledee and Tweedledum out of Alice in Wonderland. I think they did it on American Bandstand, didn't they, John?
I think you're right.
And they dressed up in these Tweedledee, Tweedledum little beanie hats and everything.
Yes, yes.
And that guy, you tell he was from England because he didn't care what he was typically English when it comes when you dress up like Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Now, that's weird. I mean, people would do all kinds of strange things, and you would think that would be a detriment, but it probably wasn't. But tell me about when the concert. I'm kind of interested in when you guys went to Washington Courthouse in 2001 to see him and they were publicized as Edison Lighthouse. How was that? Was the show and who was all in the band? And I mean, did he have a full band with him?
Yeah. Well, the lead guitar player was a member of original Beatlemania, played Paul McCartney. And we got to talk to him too. And he had some free time after the show. And you could tell he looked like Paul, didn't he, John?
Yes, he did.
And we talked to him at the end of the show. And he said he was in between Beatlemanias. And I got to tell you this, John. Me and him both sang the song "There Were Bells on the Hill." So I got to sing with Paul McCartney, didn't it, John?
Oh, he did that "Till There Was You" from the Music Man, also on the Beatles Meet the Beatles album. You could tell he had played the role of McCartney. He if you close your eyes, you thought you were hearing Paul McCartney stand 5 feet away from you singing, because Dave and I, this is the kind where we were like, yeah, you're in a Beatlemania. We almost didn't say it, but we almost like prove it.
And so when he breaks in that song,
they're like, okay, he played McCartney.
Yeah. And then I got to act like John Lennon with him. Boy, I ate that up, remember? I used my Beatle voice. He said, you don't sound like Lennon. You sound more like Ringo.
Yes, he did.
But they had John. They had him there. The drummer, he had toured with a couple different bands, and he had worked with Yes, and also had worked with other band. And he was actually from England, and I can't remember who else he worked with, but he was a studio musician, drummer. And of course, John, I'm right. Tony's wife played keyboards. Am I right?
She was a keyboard. She's a keyboard.
Yeah.
I wish they would have gave a program or something, get the list of names of the performers that were there that night, John, because they were a tight band, and you could tell
they were
these were veteran performers.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about bands that had one hit wonders, and we know that Edison Lighthouse had one hit wonder. What other songs did they play? Did they play any of Tony's other songs, or did they just play cover songs? What did they, or maybe off of their album that nobody ever heard?
They did Give Me That Ding,
yeah.
And I mean, Tony and the guy that acts from Beatlemania did the other part with him, and they did that one if I remember right. And hey, John, and what was the one where Tony kind of went off to himself like a ballad? Was that one of the hits?
Yeah, he was. He did the song, other song by Edison Lighthouse, It's Up to You, Petula. I remember him doing that. But I don't think he was in the band by that point. I think he had left Edison Lighthouse. That was like the follow-up song. And, you know, it didn't do very well, but I remember them performing that. And then I remember him doing some covers of famous songs, too. You would really had to have done some research on him to put together who he was, because he did not do some of the other hits that I knew he was associated with. Now they did do the White Plains song, My Baby Loves Love. You know,
he
okay.
did do She Came Through the Bathroom Window, though, John. Remember?
Yeah, they did a medley of Beatles songs.
Yeah, and hey, John, when he did that, She Came Through the Bathroom, I thought Joe Cocker always did a good job on it. He got it pretty good too. And so, like I said, I'm trying to remember a lot of the other songs. But I do remember he did an Abbey Road medley, and so I do remember that.
Yeah, that sounds like something I would have enjoyed. You know, like you're there to hear, you know, this guy, and probably no one knew who Tony Burrows was. But when you get there, his musicianship and his talent would just kind of take over, no matter what you knew about him. I think that's what I would, because sometimes, you know, you go to hear a band and you think, I don't even hardly remember too much about them. But then, you know, their raw talent just takes over. Like, it sounds like you guys really enjoyed the concert.
Well, John, here's
John,
one thing. And John, you remember this too. When me and John talk to these artists, other people must think we're interviewing them, but we're just talking to them. We've had this happen at concerts before, and John always kids me. I get as close to the stage as I can get, and I find ways of getting up there, don't I, John?
Yeah, he does. He does. And I think because I was so impressed how they hung around after the concert just to talk to people. In fact, I remember at the time we had our mom with us because we wanted her to go out too.
She wanted
and was getting
to see
kinda,
the show.
And mom enjoyed the show, but it was getting kind of late, and so we had to leave. But if it had just been Dave and I, they invited us to. They was going to have a backstage little get together. Even
no, that's
tell what the guy John. Tell what the guy played Paul McCartney did for mom. Sung a song to her.
He sang for mom, and he said, "God bless you for coming here tonight. It's you know, I really appreciate it." And he even gave mom a little kiss on the forehead, you know, and said,
no,
"Thank you
awesome.
So much for coming." It was just really, really thoughtful and touching.
Now, do you remember his name?
I wish I would.
If I had my Beatlemania album out, he played on that album. Hey,
oh, we can
man,
we
can't.
Probably find that out. I think that's the kind of stuff I really enjoy. I mean, digging that up and maybe talking and see if he's still around, if he's playing.
Yeah,
I would imagine that he, you know, he's got quite a history to talk about too. But my guess is
from,
go ahead.
From the Northwest country. John, am I right? Was he from Oregon? Paul Revere?
I think he told
us
he was from the northwestern part of the United States, and I believe it was Oregon.
Yeah.
Well, John and David Timmons are my guests tonight. We're talking about one-hit wonders and talking about Tony Burrows, which is pretty incredible. Do you guys know anything that he's currently doing? Have you been able to, like, see if he's still active or playing or making music?
He's still performing in England. Every now and then that you'll see a YouTube video show up where he makes an appearance. He doesn't do regular tours, but he does make appearances. I'm not sure he's been to the United States since we saw him. That was one of the rare times.
He has sat in on some sessions, too, John. I found out of his guitar work yet, too, for certain artists.
Right. And the one part we haven't mentioned yet tonight, John, and I believe he's still doing, one of the early ways he made his name was doing jingles for commercials. And to this day... He is the voice of a lot of songs in different commercials.
And you can make a living doing that.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
If you get the right royalties and everything from that, a lot of those guys can make good money from doing that. Well, let's play, what song would you guys, want to play the Pipkin song?
Yes.
Let's hear the Pipkins, yeah.
And then maybe follow up with, since we've been talking about White Plains, let's actually hear the White Plains song.
Okay, we'll hear that. And we got a lot of show left, so stick around. John and David Timmons will be with us until 7:30, and we'll be right back after this, so stick around.
Last night I had a crazy dream about a chick in a black bikini. Oh, she looked so good, she couldn't be real. She must be a magic genie, but she disappeared around the corner. All I saw were three doors and the top of her bikini. I made it through the first door, there was a party going on. I asked about the chick, but what they said was freaky.
Kaboom, kaboom, don't you just love it?
I presume this really far-out cat was screaming half crazy. Ball, ball, balloon, ball, balloon, bam, boom. I said, hey, man, cut that jive and tell me where the chick went. But he looked at me as pleased as could be and said these words, but I wonder what he meant.
Chick-a-boom, chick-a-boom, don't you just love it?
Don't you just love it? Chick-a-boom, chick-a-boom, boom, boom.
My Baby Loves Lovin'. That's White Plains. We talked about them a little bit ago. My guests are John and David Timmons. You can go on their website, timmonsrock.com. And we always try to stump these guys once a show. So we're going to try to do that. We did start off with Daddy Dewdrop instead of the Pipkins. And we played Chick-a-Boom, which was also Mr. Tony Burrows. Man, he does
You know there was a cartoon group called the Groovy Ghoulies that did that song too?
The Groovy Ghoulies.
John knows I was going to mention that, didn't you, John?
Yeah, it was on CBS in the early 70s. I think another guy,
the lead singer.
Yeah. And another guy, I think, behind that song, John, that he dropped was an actor named Richard Monda, M-O-N-D-A. And I think he was involved with that, too, but he was mainly known as being an actor. And he was involved with that song. And in fact, I think he was one of the people involved for the voiceovers for the Groovy Ghoulies. So Dave's right.
Yeah, well, I think the Wolfman did lead on that because I think Frankenstein Dracula did backup vocals.
That is so funny.
I could save that for Halloween. I know too much about it, guys. It's scary.
How did that song go as far as popularity and reaching in the charts?
Actually, it did quite well. It came out in 71, and Billboard and USA, it peaked at number 9. I mean, that's a top 10 hit. That's pretty amazing. And username
Daddy
Dewdrop.
And what made it so big, John, the CBS cartoon, because they got permission from them to use that on the cartoon, and I think the kids just loved it, and it got to be I want to say, John, didn't it get number 1 in England?
In Britain, it had its share of success, too. I mean, I mean, I don't know where it peaked, but I do know in the USA it peaked at number 9, and in Canada at number 2.
Yeah, that's amazing, and
I made the Wolfman happy, probably.
Yeah, and it's funny to kind of think about how, you know, what makes a hit record, and we're talking tonight about one-hit wonders and one-hit records and one-hit artists. And they can be bands, they can be people, they can, you know, be like projects. You know, you could get into different things and how that was able to get people to listen to it and to buy it. And that's kind of a psychology behind that. You can have bands that are incredibly talented and can write amazing songs, but they still don't crack the top 40. They don't make much money, but then you get like a cartoon band, and that's not really a band, or projects that people put out there, and they just, people love them and buy them. And so I guess it'd be pretty hard to figure out how to create a hit record. And one thing I wanted to talk to you guys about was like the follow-ups. You mentioned, John, about Edis Nighthouse had a follow-up record that you didn't think Tony was on. And how do you think these guys did? Because what we're talking about basically are bands that had one top 40 hit and then probably spent the rest of their time trying to do the same thing. What are some of the interesting follow-ups that Tony Burrows had or some of these bands had?
Hey, John, I'd like to bring up a group you know well, the Knack. My Sharona, and remember the follow-up record did terrible. And you get thinking about the Doug Feigner was the lead singer of that group, and he was on a talk show on KOMX I was listening to one night, and he said he don't know what happened. He said this Capitol signed us. And I think they're Taboo, though. They was compared with a group from Liverpool, and you get that comparison. That's the Kiss of Death for any rock and roll band. And I think because they's on Capitol and everything. Hey, John, I think John and I have talked about this off and on ourselves. And I still think that's the kiss of death. If you're compared with the Fab Four, watch out.
Well, I'm going to have to take that as a segue into our Stump the Timmons Brothers. Are you guys ready?
Yeah. Although, before you ask that question, John, here's one. I'm curious if there's anybody who would know this, and I'm telling them, don't look it up, but what was the follow-up single?
Don't Google
single?
It.
All right, don't Google it. What was the follow-up single to My Sharona by the Neck that barely, I'm not sure he made the top 40, but it did get airplay just because it was riding the coattails of My Sharona?
I'm going to take a guess. It's Good Girls Don't.
Very good, John.
Very good, yes.
And you know what? I like that song. I thought it was a good song. And
good.
Yeah, and I can remember the first time was that in the late 70s, guys? Was that like right around 80?
Yeah. About 79, 80. Yeah.
I remember being in Westland Mall at Lazarus in the second floor, and back then it was kind of the very beginning of videotapes. And they had a little television with a videotape, and they had the Knack playing My Sharona and it just kept playing. And I remember just stopping and thinking, wow, they, like you said, David, they were dressed like the Beatles. You know, they had the white shirts and the skinny ties. They had the, like the Beatle haircuts. And that got my attention. Plus, I really thought they were good. I mean, they had that real.
They had talent, John. And that's always been a mystery to me. But maybe one of the mistakes they did, one of the tours they did was with Aerosmith. Maybe that didn't help them. Imagine the Knack with Steven Tyler.
Yeah, that's a mismatch, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you've got to think about the people coming to see Aerosmith probably wouldn't be interested in the Knack. Maybe the Romantics, somebody like that would fit in good with them.
Right.
But what we're going to do now, we're going to play a song. Now, this is a follow-up song. This is the song that came out at the I'm not going to say, I want you guys to come up with is the name of the band and the name of their number. It didn't hit number one, but it was in the top 20. And it was in 1966. I think this song we're going to hear is 1966. The song that hit number 20 in the top 40 was in 1965.
Okay.
We're going to play the song, and I want you guys to tell me the artist and the name of the top 20 hit. Okay? We'll be right back. We're going to play the song and see what John and David can come up with. This is their follow-up to their big hit.
Yeah.
Track Mind. That was the band did almost broke the top 40. They didn't quite do it, but it was close in 1966. Give me the name of the band, and if you can, you would know their number 20 hit that was in 1965. You want me to do the Jeopardy music?
Yeah, I'm going to write on a hook because I recognized, believe it or not, it's the first time I ever heard that song. I never heard it before. But I was listening real closely when you told me it was a follow-up. I was like, gosh, what does that sound like? Because there's a certain part of it there that made it remind me of the song by the Knickerbockers called Lies.
Well, I think it's the Knickerbockers.
Lies, lies, you're telling me that you'll be true.
Did you see the comparisons of that though, John, with the other song? And the guitar riffs are about the same.
Think about that, David, because I think that's what we're leading into was the follow up. Okay, so you got a hit record, man. Give us another hit record. And I didn't ask, like I've interviewed Jimmy Walker, who plays drums on both of those songs. I've interviewed him twice, maybe three times. Jimmy Walker went on, he has some great stories. He went on to be in the Righteous Brothers, and now he is a blues singer in Las Vegas. He plays, has a residency there and plays the blues. Jimmy's a tremendous guy. He's got great stories. And if you really want something to do, you can go out on John Talk Radio and the podcast of Jimmy Walker. There's a couple of them out there. But he does talk about that a little bit, David. They, you know, like any record company, make me another hit. And that was the Charles Brothers.
John,
there were two. Yeah, go ahead.
John, when you talk to them, did he say that they were so influenced by the Beatles that the record company wanted a Beatle-like sound?
Well, it's kind of interesting because, so the Charles Brothers were in it. And I'm trying to think of the other guy. There's the guy, Bobby Randolph, I think is his name. Buddy Randolph played the saxophone. And he came in the band as a Remember the song Short Shorts that was like in the 50s? Do you guys remember that? She's got short shorts. That was him. Mm-hmm. That was Buddy Randolph, and he was a rock and roll guy and a tremendous talent. Played saxophone, was more in the pre-Beatles thing, and when they came in, they didn't know exactly what to do. They had like many songs before Lies. He had a big hit with Short Shorts. They had a couple other songs that they did, but it was that jumping. I don't know if I want to say David did jumping on the bandwagon, more or less just following into what the Beatles had broken with that. And I think to this day, that's the best imitation Beatles song.
He has John Lennon down. He has John. John Lennon could have done that song. I have the original 45 of that on ABC Records, and every now and then I will play this. And if you listen to the Beatles and play that back to back, I tell you, he was heavily sound like it.
Well, I think the song we played, One Track Mind, I really like that song too. It's like you said, it's like, okay, if you like Lies, you should like this, right? So that's what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. And they're probably thinking, okay, we're going to market it the same way. We're going to get it out there and get people to buy it. Now, it hit 43 in the top Billboard 40 or 100. So that's not bad. I mean, that's good enough for a lot of bands to retire
they
on.
They almost outdid the Groovy Ghoulies then.
If they could get that good. But we do have a caller. Let's see if that caller has a question. Hello, you have a question for the Timmons Brothers?
Well, I actually have some songs that I was thinking about.
And who are we talking
one
to?
One of my favorite ones. My name is Dave.
Hi, Dave.
One of my favorite one-hit wonders. I always wonder about these bands when they hit and then just fall away. One of my favorite one-hit wonders songs is Smoke from a Distant Fire by the Sanford Townsend Band.
Wow.
Never heard from them after that. Got a lot of airplay, was on the Midnight Special, and they just faded away.
David, I can answer that for you. Their lead singer got killed in a car wreck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's – hey, John, am I correct on that?
I don't know on that one. I remember Sanford Townsend Band. I remember
I don't know if it's the lead singer or the guitar player, but one of them did.
Now, what year would that have been, Dave?
70.
Hey, Dave, I think – did that come out about – and, Dave, if I write on this, about 72?
I think more like 76.
76. I know it was in the 70s.
And the reason I say that, because I remember when we went to the Ohio State Fair in 1977, one of the cover bands that we saw earlier that day played this song.
Yes.
And they played the also other song by Pablo Cruz, What You Gonna Do.
I got haunted by that song. I got haunted by that song that day.
Because so that was the summer of 77, so it had been out by then, yeah.
But Dave, I think that's what happened to one of them. I don't know if it was the lead singer. I remember it was in Circus Magazine about this a long time ago, but maybe I'll have to check and see.
There's a lot of one-hit wonders that of people that were either actors or actresses that got just dabbled into music briefly and then got out and did very well for themselves. And you could do a whole show just on those people. And
do you think of Richard Chamberlain?
Absolutely.
Richard Chamberlain, David Soul.
Yeah, he had a hit, didn't he, John?
Yes.
Yes.
You know, Shaq.
Well,
you know, Shaquille O'Neal had a hit, you know? I mean, Richard Chamberlain couldn't sing, but my goodness, he sold a lot of records on MacArthur Park.
He sure did. You know, and funny thing about him, he only played a doctor on TV.
And a priest.
Yeah.
Several things. So, I tell you what, I don't remember that song. Smoke from a Distant
It's got sax in it.
It was real big in 76.
Kind of a, Doug, when you say
great,
kind of a jazz
almost,
rock
almost
sound.
Almost southern rock a little bit.
A little bit
yeah.
Leonard Skinner sound.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well,
yeah,
a little softer, a little poppier, a little more pop than Skinner, but certainly
yeah,
had
yeah.
southern,
yeah.
you know, kind of Atlanta rhythm section,
there
you know, along those lines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, smoke from
you
distant
want,
fire.
You want to sing it for us?
Oh.
I guess.
hey, Dave, if Dave ends up singing that, it'll be a Razor's Edge reunion.
Oh,
you can
no.
back him up, David.
Let me bail him out. There are so many actors turned singers. We use it as one of our categories for some of our rock and roll trivia shows, by the way, because there's that many out there, and it's
yeah.
an incredible list. And
yeah,
they could be paid as one hit artists.
How about Telly Savalas with F?
Wasn't
close of his hair either, guys.
Yeah, he didn't have much. But,
how about the really? Talk a bit about the really obscure people like, and I know David would enjoy this, the Ballad of the Green Berets by Sergeant Barry Sadler.
I sung that Sunday
you know,
night, remember?
That's right. And though you know, guys like that, you know.
Yeah, Barry Sadler.
Yes, Barry Sadler.
You know, you know, David, I think the reason why that record did so well, John Wayne helped push that record, and of course, I don't think it did too well, what I call but basically, if you was a military person and he sung out on the assault show, but there's so many different characters had that one hit, and I'll let the other guys talk, but it's amazing.
I really enjoy, you know, talking about the obscure when you talk about that. What's his name? That played Mr. Spock. He had an album out.
Leonard
Nimoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know
yeah.
if he had a
yeah.
hit record, but I know he did some Beatles yeah. songs, and they're really, really bad.
He
but,
did with just a little help with my friends.
Oh, they're awful.
He sure needed some
can't
friends.
Sing. He needed some
the
friends.
The Klingon Nation
sing,
probably
I
wanted
think.
To do away with him.
Oh, that's funny. But it's cool to talk about that. Now, when we're talking about Tony Burrows, John and David, we were talking about the fact that the songs didn't all sound the same. So you could hear like one of his songs and then listen to the Daddy Dewdrop, and it doesn't sound anything like Love Grows. And one of the songs that I think, you know, how about Brotherhood of Man? Now that's a song that did he sang lead on that? And tell me a little bit of history behind that.
Yes, it was a band, and it was more of a duet, him and a woman singer, and it was a group after he had been with White Plains, which was a you know they we talk about traces back to the Flower Pot Man, and then when he got tired of what they were trying to do with White Plains, this was actually some members of that group, and they reformed with some other different members. And that's how they got to that Brotherhood of Man. And here's really an ironic fact about this, and I don't know if the if our caller Duck is still there, but he will remember this song.
He dropped.
After Tony Burrows left the band, six years later, they had another hit, the Brotherhood of Man, but he went in a band, a completely different style, called Save Your Kisses for Me. Though You're Only Three. You remember that song? It was kind of a bouncy, bubbly song. And that was some of the members that still stayed around. Now, this United We Stand, if you look at the time when it came out, that was when there was, you know, a lot of protests going on. And there was, you know, with the war protests right in the middle of the Vietnam War. And kind of a middle of the road, let's don't... do anything that would be controversial, play it middle of the road and something we can all agree on. And to this day, every now and then, especially around like Super Bowl time or Christmas where they have these commercials, some big corporation they want to put together, you will hear lyrics, lines, maybe not the original song, but from that song, United We Stand by the Brotherhood of Man.
What do you think of that? I never would have thought that that was him singing that, because it's kind of an R&B vibe to it. Do you guys agree with that?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, definitely.
It doesn't have the energetic bumblegumish sound that we associate with some other songs.
Hey, John, you know what I compare it with, guys? The Average White Band.
Okay.
Remember they had that R&B sound, and you get listen to that, and it's amazing how this man could do that with his voice. And
yeah,
it's very interesting.
I'm impressed. Let's play it. This is the Brotherhood of Man, United We Stand. This is another of the many personalities of Tony Burrows. And we're listening to the songs of Tony Burrows. And the Timmons brothers, John and David, are our guests tonight. And we're talking about one-hit wonders. And we're shining the bright light on Mr. Tony Burrows. And let's play that. This is United We Stand. We'll be right back.
Nothing in the world that I would rather see than your smile, my love.
That is a good song, a Brotherhood of Man with United We Stand. What a good song. What a good production on that song. Do we know who the female vocalist is on that?
Haven't found that out, John, for sure. I've read it somewhere, and it's just not coming to me right now. And I know she would still be in the band later on when they made that song, and like I was talking about in 76, called Save Your Kisses for Me. So she would stay with the Brotherhood of Man. I just
John,
can't think of her
song-
name.
That song was used after 9/11 too.
Yep.
Yeah,
I remember well, along with David Bowie's Heroes. Them two were the main two was played.
What a good song. And I would never in a million years think that that was the the guy that sang Chicka Boom or Gimme That Ding. I mean, give me a break. That sounds
You
I
talk about
like...
versatility. It's amazing how this man could do this.
Oh, yeah.
And when you heard that song, it sounded like he had – it reminded me of a live – like Live Aid when they all got together and sung. It had that kind of harmony to it. It is amazing.
I would agree with that. It does have that kind of vibe to it. And it, and so, you know, one thing that we're doing on John Talk Radio, we've done two and we're doing our third one coming up, is we're doing a show called Gear Talk. And what we do is we take an album and we get a musician that I've had on the show. We had Scott Nikowski. He did a show on the band Wilco on the album Summer Teeth, which was just a, if you get a chance to listen to that, break into Jeff Tweedy's band Wilco and how amazing that album was, and he knew the producers and things like that, and you kind of just kind of get an idea and a feel of how the finished product comes out. And Linda Dactyl is going to be on. She's going to do one in November, guys, which is she's a Hammond B3 player. She's also an incredible drummer. She's really, really good jazz B3 player, and she plays progressive rock and all kinds of stuff. And she's going to do a gear talk where gear kind of has double meaning to it. It could be the equipment, and it's kind of gear, like cool. And so we're going to break those down. But that's what I kind of like with this. When we listen to these songs, how they're produced and how that, you know, they come out and have this like a certain vibe to them and a certain sound to them, and how that you could probably take a fairly a mundane or middle of the road song, but you get the right people, the engineers, the producers, and the mixing crew, and can make a beautiful song. What do you guys think of that? I mean, the production of that song sounds a little interesting to me. I really like it.
Yeah. Hey, John, it reminded me of that Phil Spector wall of sound.
Yeah.
Like Phil Spector always wanted. And I'll let John talk, but when you hear that, it just had that sound to it.
Very clear production. Goes back again to Tony's voice. It's a pleasant sounding voice, it reflects the lyrics, like it, to unite, come together, and it has this crescendo, you know, that they're really wanting to convey not only the words, but they're trying to give you the tone that, you know, we really need to stick together here. And
you know, they all sing that in United
States. And it comes
Senate,
out in
John.
The music and in the lyrics.
Hey, John, they need to sing that in the Senate right now.
Yeah, that would work in any Senate.
Yes, I agree.
So,
I agree.
John, can I tell a funny story here at this point? Because it involves
absolutely.
This song, United We Stand. Now, at this period, it's 1970, early 1970. Tony Burrows is still known mainly as a studio vocalist, and he's the voice behind these songs. And Tops the Pops, a British TV show similar to American Bandstand was in USA, always wanted to bring out the latest artists to do the latest hits. And there was a show in February of 1970. The producers, the hosts of the show, thought they were getting three different groups, and they signed them that night to get. They had Edison Lighthouse come in, they had White Plains come in, and the Brotherhood of Man. And by the end of the night, they realized what was going on. Tony would be just changing into a different outfit and coming out and joining a different group of performers.
Oh, that's a great story.
The guy who was the head director of the show was so, I guess, peed that he was misled that supposedly he was unofficially blacklisted by the BBC for misrepresenting who he was. And it wasn't until like several months later that they invited him back on Top of the Pops because they thought it made him look bad that people watch over. Didn't we just see him earlier? You know,
hey John, can you imagine? Wait till I change my jacket and I'll be in my next group.
Yeah, I'll be right back. Yeah, that's A. You have a lot of talent. Plus, you have to have a lot of jackets. Yeah, I don't have that
many
jackets.
I mean, how
many
people could? And it's always important to remember the era. 1970, there weren't all these videos and you know you had to look, find Rock Magazine, see what artists look like, or maybe hope they had
an
album had their picture on it. So here's this guy who was faceless, you know, and Tony even said years later, he goes, it wasn't until almost that people really started to realize, he said it was a couple of days later when they went back and reviewing, like, wait a minute. That's the same guy who was out earlier. They didn't even catch it that night while the show was going on. And he said, I didn't try to mislead people. I was just told, okay, now we're ready for Edison Lighthouse. I was like, well, I'll put on my Edison Lighthouse outfit. You know, now I'm ready for Brotherhood of Man. I'll put on my Brotherhood of Man outfit.
Hey, Johnny could have been like, he could have been like Clark Kent, put on a pair of glasses and sung too, see?
I tell you, he was joking, Dave. It's ironic you say that because he was saying that essentially all he did was change his clothes, and he said a lot of people still didn't make the connection that it was the same person.
Shades of Superman.
Yeah, if he put on a couple of wigs or something, that nobody would ever be able to tell. That's an incredible story. I would love to be able to, you know, for him to – that would be great to interview him. How many stories he has.
John, he would make a great guess. John and I got lucky enough to talk to him for about 15 minutes, and it was so amazing. And
well – I think that there are so many stories like that out there, and the musicians are well and willing to tell their stories because it's just a big part of their life. And we found out, you know, and you guys have found out too, if you can get past their management, you know, most of them are like super nice people and we'll talk to you with very little, you know, like not big entourages or any of that stuff. I mean, we saw when we were in Kent stage and Marcy and I were going into the hotel and saw Denny Lane sitting in the hotel by himself with his guitar. It was just him and his guitar sitting there by himself. And I thought people wouldn't even know who he was. You know, no one knew who he was. Nobody was coming up to him. I mean, and this guy is a huge part in rock history, but he's just not like a big, you know, popular name or anything like that. But let's try another. You guys did good on the Stump the Timmons Brothers. This is a pretty easy one. This is kind of like me lobbing a softball to you. So this shouldn't even take long at all. But we talked a lot tonight about hit records, right? And there was in rock, let's just say music history. It's not necessarily rock history. The artists that had the most number one hits would be the Beatles. Would we agree with that? They had 20 number one hits with the 1964 to 1970. Who's next on the list of the artists with the next large amount of number one hits?
You know, it's interesting because I heard this. It wasn't about hits, but they were talking on NBC Today show this morning, and they released the latest numbers of all-time selling, not number one hits, but music of albums and singles both, and Beatles are still number one. But I was surprised to find out who was number two now. It wasn't Elvis Presley. It was Garth Brooks, you know, for most records sold all time. That, by the way, Led Zeppelin's number five.
Yeah, that's hard
is
to believe.
Is
so,
Bob the Hoople anywhere near that, you guys?
He's got him in.
They're kind of near there, David. They're at like 4 million.
You knew he was going to do that.
Yeah, you can try.
It begs the question, then, who has the most number ones? I guess, John, I'll ask a question. It has to be underneath a certain name. Like, it can't be, like, let's say... What I mean by this, it can't be like Phil Collins solo work plus Genesis.
No, it can't be two together, right?
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, I just want to make sure. Okay. The most number ones next to the Beatles.
Correct. Number two in that list.
I'm going to go on a wild hunch here. I'm going to say Frank Sinatra.
Okay. John, what's your guess?
You know... This was really, I mean, I understand in a way it's a softball because it's whoever it is, obviously they're very, very, very famous. But the problem is I follow so much of this, I can think of so many different people it could
That's
be for number ones.
And, yeah, this is number ones, right. Number
gosh,
one records.
Man, for number ones. Mariah Carey.
Yep, you got it.
I got it? Oh, my God.
It wasn't old Blue Eyes. It wasn't.
Good
all.
Job, man.
How
Mariah
close
Carey
was Frank Sinatra,
had,
are you guys? How close was Frank Sinatra?
He's down the list a little bit. I could look that up for you. Mariah Carey has 18 number one hits. I would have never guessed that in a million years.
Me either.
And let me explain the only reason I guessed it, John, because in preparation for one of our rock and roll trivia shows, we had a category called All-Time Best-Selling Albums. And while I was looking it up, getting preparing for that category, I came across for number one hits. And I was surprised who was number two. And because it was so unusual, I think that's why it stuck in my mind. I was like, really? You know, I like.
Yeah,
and
you got
you know,
it.
You know
that's
how
great.
It,
good job.
You know how you find out something and you're kind of stunned and like, I will remember this, you know.
You know,
yeah,
Brother John, who I, you know who I was going to guess second? The Banana Splits.
Yeah, I think
I know Drooper had his problems, but, you know.
Between them and the Ghoulies, David, you got some the number one hits there. Mariah Carey had 18. Elvis Presley was 17.
18.
And Michael Jackson, 13. Madonna, 12. The Supremes, 12. Whitney Houston with 11.
A lot of female artists, John.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what I'm saying, you think of so many males that dominate sales, but I'm surprised to hear that many female artists are that high.
Yeah, you guys, you know one guy that shocks me, it's not on that, it would be in that list, and you think he had a lot of hits, Neil Diamond.
I don't know. Yeah, it's not on this list. This is top Billboard 100, the Hot 100. So
That's interesting, John. That's something I didn't know. You guys both got me on that one. I really, to be truthful, I did not know.
Yeah, I would have never known it either.
Yeah.
Seriously,
I just had a lucky stab from past research, really. I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, because, in fact, I guess because I was so stunned, surprised, that's why I remember it later. And John, I want to say another thing, kind of staying with the topic, but we talk about White Plains. Another song that could have been a hit for them is a very well-known song that his name was Greenaway, that he worked with closely, Tony Burrows.
Okay.
He's the one that wrote this song that was later recorded by the Fortunes, and the Fortunes hit became a hit. White Plains went nowhere. That song, You've Got Your
Rainy
Troubles, I've Got Mine.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Wow.
Who got the hit record with that?
It was a group called the Fortunes out of Britain.
Oh, yeah. Great song.
Talk about one-hit artists, you know. Again, where the song's bigger than the artist, you know. But I guess my point being, it's funny how White Plains, at least underneath the White Plains, it didn't do hardly anything on the charts. And it was actually a good follow-up, and it was proven when another group performs it, and it became a top 10 hit.
Yeah,
and
that
John,
happened.
Let me bring this up. Guys, you remember John Loudermilk, Indian Reservation, doesn't do nothing for him. Remember what group John got number one with it?
Gosh, it's not a band you guys talk about all the time that you went to the Hall of Fame.
I know. They got me in the Hall of Fame.
No, it couldn't be them.
For those that may not know, Dave and I have been to our shows. We are avid Paul Revere and the Raiders fans, and we were referring to Indian Reservation, written by John Loudermilk. But a country version was done by a guy named Don Farden that did okay country. But, boy, when the Raiders got released, it became actually their only number one national hit.
Wow, that's hard to believe. That they did have a lot of
songs,
40 hits. Yeah, but
yeah.
That was all. And having a number one hit is just an incredible thing. I mean, a lot of bands never could do that or even get close to that. So to get to that pinnacle is like, you know, Mount Everest. And to be able to do it 20 times or 18 times, I couldn't even name any of Mariah Carey's songs. So that's weird that she would have that many number one hits. And maybe my kids could. Some of them could, but I absolutely couldn't name any of them. But I like her, though. I think she's really good, though.
Yeah. Hey, guys, you know another guy might know about a number of songs.
my name's David Crosby, and I can remember Roger and told me one time that we could have a lot of hits. When he kicked me out of the band, I said, Neil Young, you could have a lot of solo hits. And Neil looked at me and said, David, I see why Roger kicked you out of the band, too. That's David Crosby.
Now, when we talk about one-hit wonders, we're going to talk about a band that you guys should know about. I know, John, you should know about it because they came from a little town in Oxford, Ohio.
They had
a number one song, and we're going to play that song. And this is the Lemon Pipers. This is Green Tambourine. Because, John, when you sent me the email the other day, you said maybe, you know, you've interviewed people that had number one songs. And
yes.
An interesting story behind that, when I talked to Ivan Brown, who was the lead singer. His name is actually Dale Brown, but he went by Ivan. And, you know, with the band, the Lemon Pipers. And they were the, as he described it in the interview, and then go back to the interview I think was 2008 or 2009, and you go back to the interview and you listen to it, he talks about how that they were a long-haired hippie band, rock and roll band. He said they were really good, really tight, and when they got the, I think it was Buddha Records, and with you know, the Bubblegum guys, and they went in and they said, we can sign you, we can make you stars. Just like the movies, you know, sign on the dotted line, guys, and you can be stars. Well, the rest of the guys all thought it would was great because they were in New York City. They were in this big, as Ivan described it, this great big huge conference room. They had all these record producers around them. They had all these people telling them how great they were. But the only thing was they had to change their name to the Lemon Pipers. Well, Ivan didn't like that. I think they were Ivan and the Sabres at one point. I know they went by a different names. He didn't like the name. He thought it was stupid. And real blunt guy. And said, no, that sounds really not good at all. And they said, well, you know, and you've already signed the contract, so you're going to go in the studio. We're going to get you guys in there, and this is the song you're going to do. And they played Green Tambourine for him. And Ivan just hated it. He thought he hated the name of the song. He hated the band name. He hated everything about it. He said he was real cocky back then in those days. And he, like, threw a fit and wouldn't have anything to do with it. And they, you know, they let him know that, hey, you know, we appreciate your spunk, but you've already signed the contract. So he goes into the studio.
Wow.
They record this song, and it becomes a number one song. And what's cool about it is then I said, did you change your mind? And he said, yes. I really like it.
I bet he did. A number one. Hey, yeah. John, my brother John actually knows another member was at Horizon Records, was a member of that band, wasn't he, John, the Lamb of Pipers?
He was either a member or he knew him quite well, a guy named Casey. He used to run the Horizon Records there back in the late 70s. But I don't know if he might have been a member, but he definitely knew them all because he would tell me Lemon Piper stories. So either he was involved with them or he might have been a member because the guy was a pretty good kind of a musician himself, you know.
Well, let's play that, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the interview with John and David Timmons. We're talking about one-hit artist and Tony Burrows, and we'll be able to maybe bring it all come home. But I thought this would be an interesting song to play because it's a local band, and you guys have connections with Oxford, Ohio.
Yes.
And he even told us the little bar they played in that they would have – I can't remember the name of it, but they would have streams
probably
of people.
Probably the balcony.
All around the block and way down the street just to hear him play. So this is the Lemon Pipers, Green Tambourine. We'll be right back after this.
Fill a pretty dream. Give me pennies, I'll take it.
Here's a trivia question. If you guys would get this, then I would just quit right now and never talk about rock and roll ever.
We can't let that happen, John.
Can't let that happen.
The Lemon Pipers had a follow-up song, which did good. I think it might have been close to the top 50. And it was their next record, their next release, and it was on Buddha Records. Do you guys remember what that was? It's a weird
John,
record.
Let me tell you, the only reason I think I know this is because I was a big fan. I've told you this before. I love those question-answer songs. And there was a guy, he called himself Vic Venus, made Moonflight 68. And I think one of the questions would answer was, Rice is nice, like
yes,
that. Is that the song?
That's it. You're on fire
Bye,
tonight, John.
No more rock
Just
roll.
I don't know. I don't know. Apparently, I am eating brain food or something. Okay, but that's the only reason I know it, John. That was the one where, like, okay, it's time to do your exercises. Put your hands on your hips, Simple Simon. So they were using all the Buddha songs, and they would respond called Moonflight 68.
And that was the song, and he hated that song. It
I
was
bet he
another
did, because
one.
That had a very much a bubblegum sound.
Hey, John, you brought up a good point. A lot of these bands hated what the record companies wanted them to do like that sometimes. I know with The Circle, they were in that situation. They said, this formula's working for you guys. Let's keep it up. And I think sometimes you get trapped in that. And I've heard band guys say that on your program. We don't want to be trapped in that, you know. And
Absolutely right, David, because it's that, you know, I'm a musician, I'm an artist, and but I think what happened with Ivan was that he, it was all just like, this is not the direction I want to go, this is the path I want to go, blah, 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 until then they're on a plane flying around the world, they're on all the big shows, you know, it was like, then it's like, oh, okay, this isn't so bad.
We'll take it.
And, yeah, we'll take it. But there's so many bands. I mean, you mentioned The Circle. Didn't they, am I thinking of the band, did they open for the Beatles? Or who was that?
Yes, Brian Epstein was their manager. You're correct. I'm right
yeah,
on that, ain't it, John?
Yes. Yes.
They opened for one of their early tours, yeah.
They were an American artist that had the same manager of the Beatles as the Beatles did. I mean, that's not too shabby. You know,
no, that's not bad at all. But that's a really cool. I really enjoy the topic tonight, guys. I think it's one of the best we've done because just it's informative to a point where I would have never guessed Tony Burrows would be that his talents would be that expansive, that he would reach all, you know, to that. Hopefully he's getting royalties and he's making money from those records. I hope that he is. He deserves it, And as a shame, a lot of those artists aren't making any money from their hit records.
True.
But okay, so we got a couple minutes left. We got just a little over 2 minutes. What would you like to wrap up, John and David, on this topic about the one-hit wonders and anything maybe we haven't reached on?
I want to say, no matter what, it proves you can have talent, but trying to get that second hit is never easy. And you get thinking about, and Tony was so lucky to go by different names and do this, and you think of other artists that tried that and couldn't make it, but it's never an easy field.
I think one of the things, David, with Tony is he had all those cool jackets, so he could put on like jackets.
Yeah.
You know,
if he didn't have the jackets, man, I don't think he'd have made it.
I almost want to go out and get that copy of that Tops of the Pop show just to watch him in different outfits come and go. You know, I mean, really do. And Dave, it's funny, I would agree with what you said, that back to one of our original questions, that follow-up hit, why doesn't it come? And maybe Tony Burrows had the secret. Use different names. Don't go try to go by the same group name. Call yourself White Plains. Call yourself Brotherhood of Man. And then another song, probably the best Beach Boys song that the Beach Boys never made was Beach Baby, when he called himself first edition. What was the name of that group? First Class. And what a great summery song. That we haven't talked about that one tonight. That was Tony too, and it was like it epitomized what the Beach Boys should have done to have one more big hit in the 70s.
Yeah, it's a great song. It really is. And we'll go out with that song. But, guys, thank you so much. It's always so much fun to have you on. I love having you on. I appreciate what you guys do. TimmonsRock.com if you want to know more about what the guys do with their trivia. You guys hit it out of the park tonight. Great job. And we'll definitely have to work on another show coming up soon.
Oh, it's always great working with you, John.
John, thanks for the opportunity, because we can touch topics that others won't because it's not commercial enough. But when they hear it, they're like, oh, I should have heard that show.
Thank you so much, and everybody have a great evening. We'll talk to you later. Everybody take care.
I never thought that it